Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two sponsors for you this week. We have Environments for Humans promoting the Web Sherpa Summit. The URL for that is websherpasummit.com. All together like that, I'll redirect you where you need to go. And lynda.com. That's L-Y-N-D-A.
lynda.com/shoptalk.
Yeah, that'll get you where you need to go there to sign up for 10 free days of their learning resource. We're going to tell you more about both those awesome things later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Dear listener, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Verhoyer.
Hey, hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I love our theme song. It's starting to feel a little long. We should revise that when we hit 200 or something like that.
Yeah.
And we have with us Christina Halverson. Hey, Christina, thanks for joining us.
Hey.
Ba-da! We have a soundboard, if you didn't realize. If you hear sounds coming through it, it's because Dave has a magic device where he presses buttons and fun sounds emanate from it.
You know what we have in the office, and this is real? We have a fart blaster. It looks like a ray gun, but it shoots farts. Fart noises, I should say.
Fart noises, yeah, yeah.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys. This has been great.
Thanks. Yeah, let's wrap things up.
We knew you were a culture fit, you know, right from the beginning.
So by the office, you mean somewhere in St. Paul, Minnesota, is that right?
It's in Minneapolis, which let's differentiate. Twin cities, mm-hmm. Two cities. I actually live in St. Paul, so I get the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. That has nicer live-ins over in St. Paul,
it's
nicer
where work-ins we always say over that, Minneapolis. You know, people graduate from college and they go to live in Minneapolis, and then they decide it's time to settle down and have kids, and then they move to St. Paul.
Oh, is that how, you know, see, I'm from the Midwest. I don't live all that far away from the Twin Cities. I never had a strong connection up there, so I don't know how
it works.
You
know what, saying that you don't live very far away from the Twin Cities just contributes to the whole flyover syndrome where people are just like, of course. I mean, you're in Milwaukee, right?
Right.
Yeah. Milwaukee, Minneapolis. It's not that close, Chris. It's just not. It's closer than New York.
It's like 7 or 8 hours, isn't it? It's pretty far. But still, you know, we'd go up there occasionally, go up there, see, watch Garrison Keillor live, whatever, what you do up there.
That's what I do every weekend.
Yeah.
That's a major Lake draw. Wolvegan, and then I go to the Mall of America.
Nice.
Yeah, that's right. Like the New Yorkers, you know, they wake up on a Saturday, hit up the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, go take photos off the Empire State Building. It's really true. Take in a Rockettes show at Radio City Music Hall.
So, but the office then where the fart gun resides is in Minneapolis at a place called Brain Traffic.
We're professionals here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that's correct. Our office... And our company, in fact, is called Brain Traffic.
It's building. It's a real building made out of bricks and steel and stuff.
Yes, exactly. It really is.
Yeah. Not everybody has that.
Everybody does. Mm-hmm.
And what people hire Brain Traffic for is largely centered around this idea of content on the web. Right? Is that right?
Yes. This conceptual reality of content on the web. Yes.
Which you were instrumental in making a thing, because maybe how long ago was it when it just wasn't talked about at all, or it wasn't talked about it in the way that it is now?
Yeah.
Like this word content strategy. 10 years ago, was it a thing?
No, not really. I mean, I think it was a thing to some people, but not to... You know, back when I was a girl story, I don't know what accent that was. Can we do this again next week?
Yeah, yeah.
When you were a girl,
I started kind of looking around for things about content. So I actually thought I made up the title. I put interactive content strategist on my business card in 2004 because I was doing web copywriting, but I knew that what I started to do was more than copywriting because I was also like bossing people around and telling them what to do. And I was like, isn't that what strategists do? So then imagine my surprise when in 2007, I came across this article by a woman named Rachel Lovinger called The Philosophy of Data, which was about content strategy. And I was like, my God, it's a thing. This is a real thing. So then I was like, great, well, I'm going to look around. And there was nothing. I mean, there were like 8,000 Google results total in the world. And I went on Twitter and there had been like 13 mentions of it in the last 3 days. So that was that. And the first talk I gave really was at Adaptive Path about content strategy. And that was, I was in way over my head. I basically just badgered Peter Merholtz until he let me come out. So that was that. That's where the dream began.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, it's not like I was the person that invented content strategy or anything. It was just the timing was right. We had Twitter, we had LinkedIn. Content strategists began finding each other, and the conversation took off.
Yeah, so I just mean to say that you were there and instrumental to it being coined and thought of in the way that it is today, and still a big part of that conversation, right?
Yeah. I worked really hard to help raise awareness of it, and yeah, I still get to speak on it quite a bit at different conferences, and you know, it's what we do at Brain Traffic day in and day out. So we like content.
So 2007, maybe we could call it the birth of it, or the modern birth of content strategy. And then how many years later was your book, Content Strategy for the Web?
2009.
Oh, so not too much later. It was like, that's pretty cool.
It's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And it's kind of great because people are taking your, I mean, or would you say it's been a big win? Or you say that there's a long way to go? Is it, you know?
You know, I often compare sort of the rise or the evolution of content strategy really to the practice and the discipline of user experience, because you still, you know, companies still don't get it, right? They still don't get, user experience is a thing. It's not just a fancy website that we need to, you know, create and design and this incredible experience. Like that doesn't have anything to do with sort of usability or the customer journey or, you know, what people actually need. And so even that now, you know, what has it been, 15, 17 years later before people started talking about user experience, still is an uphill battle for a lot of people, specifically on the client side. So I don't see like the content strategy battle being won anytime soon, but it is certainly taking root in organizations and kind of slowly but surely being recognized as a role that somebody should have. You know, and having said that, the term content strategy and the role of content strategists, like how people define and talk about that, is still all over the map. And I don't see that really ever changing, to be perfectly frank. There's this thing called content marketing. Perhaps you have seen me rail against it on Twitter. Maybe I've talked about it once in a while. Well,
Can you draw the line? What's content marketing?
Yeah. Content marketing, the way that people define content marketing, really it's like custom publishing, right? Like when I have USAA insurance, and for years when I was in college and just out of college, like I would get this little magazine in the mail every month, you know, like managing your money and planning how to buy a car and planning for retirement. And that's custom publishing. I mean, they weren't like, you know, here are all the products and services that we have to meet your needs. I mean, they, you know, if they mentioned it, it was like on a different page. These are really just useful, you know, articles and information that would help me sort of think of USAA and trust USAA as like my partner in financial services, right? And so,
but
that
the reason
is,
they wrote that article is because it behooves them. It's kind of like a little BS article.
That was really
it's
useful,
not BS
really
always,
good stuff.
But it can be.
But yeah, they're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. You know, doing it as like a favor to me. I mean, they're doing it so that they'll build brand loyalty. And so that is kind of the thought between content marketing. The other idea is, I mean, and that's, you know, you fill in your content marketing approach. It's like, our company will be the leader in, you know, industry by delivering useful, relevant content to our customers when and how they need it most. I mean, that's what everybody says. And we were just talking about this actually over lunch here at Brain Traffic. We were like, what if people took, let's say they have a $2 million content marketing budget. What if they took $100,000 of that and, I don't know, did some customer research to find out what, you know, customers actually want from them on, let's say, their website, right? And half of what people sometimes want, especially in retail, is just a freaking coupon, right? So give them a coupon. Give out 100,000 coupons for a dollar, and then you have 100,000 households with your product in it. Like, isn't that better than a,
and that's,
you know,
marketing.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that better than like a standalone, you know, custom web magazine that's responsibly designed and available on the app? I don't know. Clearly, I have some emotions around this topic.
Here's a new one that I get. I get three of these a day. Maybe you know all about it. I get an email that says, like, "Dear Mr. Coyer, I am a freelance writer and I write articles for big publications like The Next Web and DaveRupert.com.
Mashable's always on it.
BuzzFeed.
Yeah. Here, I have, your website is really good, A+. I have three articles for that I think could be good guest articles on your website," and they give you like three titles of what they could be.
Oh, yeah.
And they want you to write back because they want you to publish it, because it's like there's probably some content in there. It's probably like 80% link baity garbage, but there might be like a couple of links to some interesting resources or whatever. If you published all of these, your website would tank because it's mostly garbage, right?
Oh yeah. But for sure.
So you know all about these. This is kind of new to me, these ones. And I feel like it's my job these days to delete those emails. I run a publication. I should be saying yes to free content. But if I did, you know, things would go south.
I agree. Because free, you know, so much of it lacks any sort of substance whatsoever. And so much of it is just more content, and more content in more places. So we need to make sure the content is, you know, responsively designed and structured so we can deliver, you know, and it's just like nobody cares. Like that's the whole thing. Nobody cares, right?
I mean, but you want them to care. Content does matter. You should care about it. So that's
is like the content, you know, the end user actually cares about or wants. I mean, for the last year and a half, I've been on this kick. Like I seriously think help and support content. Every client I go to, that's like, they're like the, you know, redheaded stepchild of the organization. They're off, they're over in a corner with like no windows. You know, they have $4 to sort of like fund their efforts. And they're toiling away in this sort of like bland tech comm. Not that tech comm is bland. I love you all. But, you know, they're so frustrated because they're like marketing. They get all the glitz. They get all the glory. And then once we get customers in, we're like, ha-ha, you bought our stuff. Good luck navigating our help section, right? And so wouldn't that be a fantastic thing for marketing to turn and invest their time and attention and money into? Wouldn't that be a great thing for content strategy to really sort of shed some light on and have an influence on? And that's where I'm interested. I want to know what people need. I mean, yeah, I care about what they like. I mean, I want to deliver what they like for sure, but what do they need?
Yeah, yeah, the difference between like and need. That's good. Should write a book.
You know, I lecture my kids on that all the time. I want a new set of headphones. Yes, but do you need a new set of headphones? Let's talk about the wants and needs.
We used to use that a similar kind of thing at an agency I worked at long ago it was one of our like little selling points to customers, like, we'll give you the website you need, not the one you want. I always felt a little weird about that from a sales perspective.
They're like, that sounds like broccoli instead of super chocolate chunk fudge delight.
you really romanced them.
Exactly.
I'm the boyfriend you need.
I have health insurance and a wide temperament. So you also run conferences, Confab, which are
Confab.
Tell us about that. It's a little outside of my nerdy circles, so I don't know much about that.
No, Chris, you're outside of my nerdy circles.
I know, but you come into ours more than we come into yours.
That's probably true. Which content strategy aims to flip that paradigm, you guys should come to ours. I mean, that was, I will say, that's sort of the vision of Confab, right? Is that you touch content, like designers touch content, coders touch content, everybody touches the content. And so why wouldn't we all come together? I mean, Erin Cassane said in her book, The Elements of content strategy is a big tent. And it's because so many of us have this direct impact on the content that ends up out there live in the world. So we wanted to bring all different folks from different disciplines and different kinds of industries and organizations all together in one room or three rooms or whatever at the party, at lunch, and have people talk about what their challenges were and start to really, and opportunities and what they've, you know, solved, problems they've solved, and really to start to connect the dots between those different areas, because that's what's exciting to me about content strategy is that it does provide a framework for discussion for connecting those different dots that ultimately are going to help streamline our processes and create new efficiencies and end up in better, more consistent content that people actually care about. So that's what Confab tries to do.
Yeah.
That I have emotions about too.
Got all the feels.
All the feels.
They kind of have a different little angle to them at each different one. I see this one specifically on higher ed coming to NOLA.
Yes.
Sounds like a fun one. I was trying to tell my buddy about it, who works in higher ed. I was like, you should go to Confab. You ever heard of it? And he's like, no, but I'm always looking for things to get my work to send me to. So maybe I'll come with him to that one.
And you're like, New Orleans. Yes. You can find more information at confabevents.com.
That's right. It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, guys. So we have our next one coming up is in Minneapolis in May. And that's where we debuted 4 years ago, was in Minneapolis. It sells out every single year. And people freaking love Minneapolis. When, you know, there, you might not think twice about it, but once you get here, people are like, oh my God, Minneapolis, who knew? So we're really proud to be able to show off our hometown like that. And then, and that's our biggest conference. Do you know who Anne Lamott is? She's like the writer's saint of writing. She's going to be speaking, and we're all pretty fired up about that, as I can tell that the both of you are as well.
She's got a Wikipedia article, so that's kind of
a big
deal.
She's serious business. And so that's about 600 people usually, and it's really fun. Then we're doing a new conference.
That's big.
It's fun. It's awesome. We throw good parties. We serve a lot of cake. And you know, the other thing I have to say is that content strategists by and large are just really lovely people. I mean that sincerely. They're smart. They're curious. They want to solve problems. They want to talk about, you know, different stuff to everybody. I mean, it's just a lovely, lovely community to be a part of.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I think that it is interesting that different cultures have different, you know, feels to them, you know?
It totally, all within sort of like the greater industry that we call tech, but totally it is. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Do you even find that, you know what? I'm not going to go there. Let's do...
can we do that after we're not live anymore?
There's things that, you know, like I don't want to call out any particular community for any particular kind of thing. You know what I was going to say though is kind of, I find that sometimes I go to like WordPress things and this isn't by and large, but they like skew a little younger.
Oh,
for whatever reason. Mm,
okay.
Is content strategies a... I don't know. Does it appeal to people in their early 40s?
We're just a bunch of old librarians is really what it amounts to. Okay. No, you know, it is really, really exciting to see a younger community kind of coming to the discipline and knowing what it is and being excited to contribute to it. But, you know, I mean, we got to stay in touch with the young folks as it is because they're all coming out of college like, how do I make the web? How do I build this? Why should I care about the end user? Because look how awesome this thing that I built is. So we got to stay in touch with the kids, Chris.
You do. You do. It's the, you know, they're the future, as they say.
The children are our future. Takes a village, my friend. Takes a village.
I put a link to Psycho Susie's Motor Lounge, which is my favorite establishment in the Twin Cities.
It's a real good one. We've tried to, we've often wanted to try to rent it out and have our party there, but it's not big enough.
Yeah, it's fairly big for a bar, but I could see it's not like a lot of open area and stuff.
Yeah, but it's a good one.
the meat and potatoes of the Shop Talk show is the Q&A section. So we have selected some questions that people have written in that we thought might be interesting for Christina and to kind of answer or have a take on. So we'll get to that in a second, but let me do a sponsor real quick. The Environments for Humans are doing their Web Sherpa Summit. That's the URL to websherpasummit.com. It will, don't be surprised, it will redirect you to the proper location where you're going to buy your tickets and stuff for this, with this conference. Maybe you've heard of the Web Standards Sherpa. It was a website that kind of had a group of writers writing for it that talked about all kinds of important stuff, clearly centered around web standards and accessibility and that kind of thing. And the people who wrote on it were the Sherpas. So just a kind of a fun little metaphor there. And it's kind of going offline, but this summit is going to kind of raise some money to make sure that it is kind of archived properly and forever on the web. But the Sherpas all themselves are going to do one of these online conferences. Oh, which is cool because you can attend it from anywhere in the world, and it's inexpensive. You know, it's $99 to attend this all day online conference from anywhere. 20% off that if you use the coupon code ShopTalk, which is cool, and you get the recordings for them, which is pretty cool. We just did their RWD summit. Me and Dave were at it, and we got the recordings today. And I was going back in there, and when I say recording of these things, it's not just the recording, which is, you know, you talking live and stuff, but it's like the as it happened exactly that day, the questions that were asked. You can jump around in the video to different points in the chat and stuff. It's a little bit better experience actually than just like a QuickTime video of the thing. So it's pretty cool. The URL again is websherpasummit.com, and that is coming up April 2nd. So check that out. Okay, let's do some questions. What do you got, Dave? You got one to?
Here's a question from John Booman. Man. Sorry, John. Here we go. I'm the lead for website development projects at an advertising firm, and I get asked a lot from clients, how should I send you changes to the website? It's usually followed by send us emails with the link to the page you're describing and what edits you want to make. The problem is we get inundated with emails that usually only have a few changes per email. It causes a lot of time being spent making sure we had made all the requested changes. But of course, no matter how hard we try, there's several that get overlooked or done incorrectly. Is there a service that allows you to see the website along with an overlay of a client markup and notes? We tried browser plugins, but it's never fun to explain to a client how to install a plugin, especially IE, and how to use it.
This just came in today. It was like, you know, part of content is keeping that content up to date, you know?
For sure.
Is there something better than email for this in your experience?
Yeah. I have not heard of a good like WYSIWYG overlay, although wouldn't that be dreamy? Somebody make that happen. A tool that I can recommend that is specifically created for agencies to gather content and keep track of edits and revisions from clients is called Natch Gather Content. And it's a really handy, really user-friendly tool. Clients seem to like it quite a bit. And it's, you can just go to gathercontent.com. James Deere, they're out of the UK, and he's just a lovely, lovely guy. They've got a good blog over there too about content strategy. But that might be something that's just going to streamline workflow and help with feedback and edits and so on. I don't know if it has any kind of visualizing tools that will show people what the content looks like once it's up. But that should really help you guys out. Get things off email.
I'm sure that's exactly what I was looking for. Yeah, I think, you know, email has its place, but yeah, it's the default for everything. So yeah. When it starts to come to something that's very specific, like can you make changes to this specific content, a tool is the way to go.
Yep, agreed.
I bet there is a WYSIWYG. I bet somebody could find it, you know, where you can like bring up a URL, highlight a sentence, and like make a note and send it. There probably is something like that out there. I wouldn't doubt it.
I was going to say, you're going to hate me for saying this, but this is a feature in Microsoft's new Spartan web browser.
We're not going to hate you, Dave. We love Microsoft here. In fact, you're really coming around to your idea that there's way too much monoculture related to tech in you know, Macs and Chrome and all this stuff that I love. It's too monoculture-y. So we should talk about these type of things more.
So it's... Microsoft has that OneNote thing. Evernote would be a good thing too. Maybe you could share, you know, but like, I think Microsoft has designed a browser around this exact use case that you're describing.
How about
this
one?
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but cool. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't need that in my daily browser, but how cool is it going to be that I could, in theory, just, because with their touchscreen stuff, you just circle the thing you hate and you say, fix that or whatever, and send that to somebody. It could be kind of cool. I don't know.
True.
That, you know,
especially for like low tech environments, like
for sure.
Some office. some office, some mythical office with a with terrible boss. You guys know that, right?
You know, what's interesting is that the topic really breaks down into a couple of different areas, because on the one hand, we're talking about visualizing the content in the design, right? Which is huge. We're talking about Workstream in terms of how stuff gets handed off and what tools are being used there. And we're talking about tracking revisions. And so, you know, I don't know if there's a tool that does all three of those, but you're right. It sounds like a great opportunity for some sassy startup.
What about kind of as Melanie's saying here in the chat room, get them in the CMS or use a CMS that's really easy for this type of thing. How do you feel about that? Is there a place for that, or is
you tend Oh, to, for sure. Yeah. If you want to invite people to make their own updates, that's called distributed authorship, where you essentially can assign different authoring levels or levels of permission to whoever you want across the organization that's got to log into the CMS. If you're doing that, the challenges quickly arise, like, can you have any editorial oversight to that content? What if people make these crazy updates and then don't go back and update it for 6 months? What if, you know, there's brand and voice tones that are totally inappropriate or off? So there are challenges there. You know, another thing that you can do is lock down editorial permissions within like a content team or a CMS or a QA team. But that doesn't really necessarily solve the issue either, because they're still going to be going back and forth with the subject matter expert or the people that want the updates. I mean, I know organizations that have entire, you know, teams devoted simply to making, like, can you please fix the period here? Or can you swap out this word for that word? And they have ticket systems, you know, and then it doesn't really have anything to do with the substance of the content or tracking that. It's just filling orders on whatever people are asking for.
Yeah. Speaking of the CMS thing, we have one here from Corey Schaefer, who writes, and I recently started a small WordPress blog with some friends, but, you know, substitute the word WordPress for anything because it doesn't really matter here. I'm the web developer / designer for the group. I tell my friends to make sure that they fill out the important fields before posting articles, like featured images and what categories it's in. I still find that they often forget these fields. I then have to manually go in and correct them on a regular basis. Do you know of anything to kind of make these things a requirement before they publish an article? Is it a good idea to make those things kind of required fields? Or
yeah, you know what? This feeds directly into what I was just talking about with distributed authorship, in terms of you're going to let a bunch of different people publish to, you know, a blog or a site or wherever. You know, how do we make sure that they are checking off all the boxes? I mean, yes, right? I don't know what I'm not a CMS wonk, and I don't know necessarily what the tool is or what the switch is that you flip
right.
within,
right.
you know, any kind of a tool to say you can't hit publish until you have specifically filled out this field. But I would imagine that that's a feature that would be available, right? You know,
right.
I think the other sort of analog option is just give them a freaking checklist of here are the things you need to do and check off before you can actually, you know, before this is what you want to do so that your blog post looks super awesome.
Sounds like he's already done it with his friend. He's already told them that, but it's not working. So technology could get in your way here. I mean, certainly there's any number of ways to just say, like, well, you know, the publish button doesn't work until these things are filled out, you know?
Yeah. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's a question for an online forum. I'm sorry that I can't tell you which, you know, menu to use or anything. I feel
no,
like
but that's the kind of
to,
thing
but,
that's
yeah.
pretty easy to Google, you know, because it's so CMS dependent. Or if it's not CMS
that's
dependent,
right.
There's, you know, I can tell you right now, there's HTML5 attributes for attributes that don't allow forms to be submitted unless there's data in them. So,
Yeah. So lock that down. That's what we're saying.
Lock it down, Mr. Corey.
How is there not a sound effect for that?
I don't have a lock sound effect, although I should probably upgrade for an airlock.
Well, all right. I mean, I can say, don't you have like a foot stomp or a...
There's a shotgun.
Cheering or shotgun.
That one's too long, Dave. Always too
and
long.
And by that...
I don't know how to respond to that. I have no response to that.
Nick Santini writes in. Dave, do you want to read it?
Yeah, I can do this. And I'm a web developer, data assistant for a distributor of safety equipment. We have three large e-commerce sites, each slightly product specific, i.e. industrial safety, first responder equipment, and confined space equipment.
Mm-hmm. The kind of business that might be in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, it's very Twin Cities, very Twin Cities.
What?
We currently
industrial safety. I have no idea.
That's just exactly what we're known for: Mall of America and industrial safety equipment. Mm-hmm. that's what's on our license plates next to the loon.
There's a defibrillator and some lakes.
The hard hat.
Land of 10,000 defibrillators.
We currently have upwards of 4,000 products, all defibrillators. The same products are indexed on each of the three sites. However, some products can't be accessed through the specific site's navigation, only in the search. The problem I fear are we running into how Google treats duplicated content. How badly does this affect our page rank for products due to duplicate content? Is it worth an immense amount of hours to change it? So
the big one here is that he has 4,000 products, and the only way you can get to them, some of them, is search. That seems
See, this is my question, and what is the search engine searching? Like,
how does it find it at all?
Yeah, I mean, is it because if we're talking about HTML pages and their search appliance is searching the actual text on those pages, then we have a significant problem, right? Because then, I mean, yeah, you're going to get duplicate content all over the place. My question is, do the product descriptions live in a CMS or in a product database? Because in that instance,
they must.
The site should it should be pulling that product description from the database, right? And so, I mean, if that's the case, then there should, do I think that duplicate content is going to affect your Google rankings? I'm sorry, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that it would. I don't even know what to say. I'm sorry, I don't have help.
Nobody
does, though.
Nobody really knows what Google's going to do,
Right, exactly. And that's how they like it. But I mean, I would say, make sure that you've got product descriptions that are being pulled by each site code from the same product database, because that's going to keep the content consistent. And then make sure, too, that, whatever tags you have on there are, the kinds of things not only that are helping to categorize products on the back end, but are also how people are actually searching for those things on external site search engines. That's the only input I have.
So these are, it's tough, but the final question is it worth the immense amount of hours to change it? I would say certainly,
Well, it depends on, yes, it's worth an immense amount of hours. I would just want to make sure that but again, it's worth an immense amount of hours because user experience, right? Right. I mean, I often sort of help people clarify, look, we're not talking about search engine optimization. We're talking about findability here. We're talking about helping your customers find something quickly and easily, know it's what they're looking for, and then getting them to, whatever next step it is for them to get it or solve their problem or whatever. And so make sure that whatever you're spending those immense amount of hours on is ending up with, not just a Google page ranking, but helping people actually find this stuff.
Yes. And it sounds like there's some CMS troubles here that you can fix. But once you've fixed it, you're not just solving one problem here with people not finding the right stuff and duplicate
That's
content
right.
or whatever. You're solving like all future problems.
Forever.
Well,
and that's what content strategy does.
Your
solves
hair will
all
grow
your
back.
Problems forever. Yeah. Call brain traffic.
Uh-huh. Your love handles will melt away.
Try this one weird content strategy trick.
Let's do another sponsor. We have lynda.com. That's lynda.com. We need to get the xylophone out for it to play our proper theme song. But the real URL is not just lynda.com, but lynda.com/shoptalk. That's where you go to sign up for your 10-day free trial or just to log in if you're already a member. But the deal there is that it's kind of the world's largest online learning resource, especially for this tech stuff that we talk about on this show and all the tangential stuff. I would not doubt that there is some content strategy stuff on there. In fact, Dave, you search right now and tell me. If there isn't, we'll edit this post, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be.
You know, they keep asking me to do stuff. Maybe if there's not, I'll go in there. I'll get stuff done.
You know what? You might consider it. I did one years ago, so I have a course on lynda.com, and I'll tell you that the process as an author was it's intensive, but in a good way. You know, like they make darn sure that your course is going to be a very good course, that every part of it is thought about and planned and ready to go. Then when you record it, you don't just sit at home and record it. They fly you out to their headquarters, sit you in this, you know, exceptionally greased chair that makes no sound whatsoever, and sit you in a soundproof booth, and you deliver your well-planned thing. It takes all week, so it's a commitment, and it was stressful. But the end result is a high quality, you know.
Awesome, report. Yeah. I'm on here right now, and what they kind of are calling the content strategy. There's kind of nothing. I mean, there's writing for the web and web semantics.
So, in your definition of content strategy, they need it.
Well, it says creating an effective content strategy for your website, but this was done in 2012. So, interesting.
Yeah. So there's something, but it doesn't have the Christina touch.
Lynda.com, who's a sponsor.
And I'll tell you, it was worth it. It was, they for authors, it is a more than fair cut.
Oh, great.
Yep. But if you're listening to the show, you may be interested in that. But the chances are, you know, as we've established a little bit, it is a big tent. But the things that we talk about in this show tend to be a little more specific to front end web development, and they have lots of that stuff on there. If you're a designer, they have lots of that stuff in there. Especially, you know, I think maybe even they're kind of known for having a lot of like Adobe training stuff, or at least that's kind of how I think of them. Like if there's some new Adobe stuff out, you can for sure find information about that on lynda.com. Lots of great stuff. So they have good teachers teaching good stuff. Check out lynda.com/shoptalk. Let's do another question.
We got one here from, let's see, John Stubbe writes in, hey, this is John from Phoenix.
Hi, John from Phoenix.
love the show. Quick question about responsive web design. What CMS would you recommend for needs like e-commerce specific content on mobile that is not on desktop and other normal tasks that come up in terms of responsive web design? And I don't have any issue with things being like triple. I'm not sure what that means, but I'm wondering if there's something better for large to enterprise websites.
I think put this in here because what does Christina think about having different content for mobile, or how do you think about how that kind of factors together? You know, I know we don't like to, you know, care about what CMS or stuff like that, but like how do you, you know, you have a large scale e-commerce site, how do you deal with mobile?
Yeah. You know, I have to say, like, as I was sitting here, I get asked all the time, you know, what CMS would you recommend for our organization? And I just was sitting here thinking that is kind of like somebody asking me, what brand of jeans do you think would make my butt look best? You know, I mean, it's, you can't answer the question. Can't answer the question until you take a good look at their butt. This ends up not being a very good, metaphor for choosing a CMS.
No, it's really good.
I can't, you know, I never am able to answer that question. I mean, my answer is always, it depends, or maybe Drupal. Those are my two answers. what should a gigantic e-commerce site do in terms of content for mobile? I mean, have you had Karen McGrain on the show? Because she's the one that's going to be able to speak to that. She, you know, what you do is you write a chunk of content that is like maybe a product summary, and then maybe you have a type that's a longer product description, and then maybe you have a type that is all the ISBNs or whatever. Because that, and then you can actually, through APIs or code, you can actually pull that content from the CMS and use it and configure it however you want to, right? So they just become like essentially building blocks for whatever kind of structure it is that you want, no matter where the, no matter what kind of screen or what size of screen or, you know, what browser or whatever is pulling it. So you really want to look at, and whether or not that content is centralized, that's everybody's sort of holy grail right now, right? Let's get all the content centralized. Let's get the right kinds of modeling finished so we can get the content structured, and then it'll magically, you know, populate whatever interface we want anywhere, ever.
yeah.
It's not quite that easy, but that is definitely, you want to look into the idea of structured content so that you can begin to think about it not as like a blob of content, but as a chunk.
That's not, it's tempting to think, I think of things like, why are you so worried about mobile? Like, aren't we trying to hold true to that anything that you could do on any other device, desktop, whatever, you should be able to do on mobile too. We've learned that truncation is not a mobile content strategy. That's kind of bad news. You know, why are you so worried about just dropping some text on there? Can't you just shuffle things around, rejigger some content so it's all kind of the same? And then it kind of turns out that it's like, well, I kind of do wish I had some kind of server side ways to get my hands on little different bits and bobs of content. So
yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But people want to know the CMS. Why is that? Why they don't want that as an answer. They're always deeply dissatisfied with, it's not the CMS, it's what you do with it kind of things. They want the CMS first. So weird.
I know they do. I mean, it's because they want the answer, right? They want something that's going to clean house for them, that's going to categorize everything. It's sort of like, can you get me a new closet? Because if I have a new closet, then magically, you know, all my clothes will fit me again and all the old stuff will disappear and, you know, whatever. And that's, it's just not, we want to believe. Well, and the other problem too is that in the CMS culture, I mean, you've got these sales approaches that are so aggressive and so well choreographed, and because we're usually talking a lot of money, right? And so these salespeople do, these companies do promise you the world, right? That's all the features, all the bells and whistles. Think about what you'll be able to do with this in the future. And so they buy it thinking about everything they're going to be able to do with the tool without thinking about how it's going to have an impact on organizational structure, whether or not, you know, they have the right skill sets to be able to work within the tool, where the content's coming from, or organizations, so on. And so it's a mess. It's always a mess. If anyone has ever had a super smooth, successful CMS deployment, call me.
The closet is another good metaphor. You're full of them. I love it.
I'm full of metaphors or similes or something.
I think it's a metaphor when it's not a direct
when you don't
word.
Use like.
Yes. It's, so if it's like a closet, it was a simile.
Yes.
Felix Wasserstein writes in WordPress. I'm sorry. It just comes up a lot. Maybe it's the nature of the show. How do you target only phones and not use the general WP mobile class? Don't be scared. I know that.
I hope you guys know this answer because I don't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's usually the question ends up being a metaphor for another thing that we want to talk about.
A larger principle.
Yeah.
Chris?
For example, I want to show different design only on phones and leave the rest as it is, meaning loading different JavaScript, different CSS, different content. I guess that's why I put the last question in as well, because I just wanted an excuse to talk about kind of mobile content in a way, and we talked about it. It's just, it's have chunks, right? Or make your CMS help you.
Yes.
What,
buy the CMS for the content. Don't buy the CMS and then try to shove the content into it.
How about I frame it this way? What about URLs? Do you care about those? When we're talking about single, you know, like if you're making a responsive site and you decide that you really do kind of want to treat mobile a little bit different, you want to pull a few different images, you want to pull a little different or less text or something like that. Do you have any stake or opinions on whether the kind of the URL for it should be identical or meh?
Nope. Sorry.
Okay. Just curious.
I mean, I'm all for the intuitive URL. That's That's my stake in the ground.
It's a good URL, not that it's necessarily the same.
Not a crap URL. That's right.
What was going through head, Dave?
Oh, I guess, Christina, are there like specific or bona fide circumstances where you're like, yes, this definitely determines a mobile, like we got to burn, like this has to be totally different on mobile, or like the mobile cannot scale up to the desktop. Like, is there a, in your constant strategy work, is there a big difference between mobile and desktop? Cause I don't know, for me, it's like none to nil. So I guess what's your perspective on this great divide?
Well, you know, again, kind of everything I say about mobile content, I got from Karen McGrain, right? And so, I mean, what I'll say, what really sticks with audiences when she says it is that you cannot control or predict how people are going to use their mobile device, right? And so I guess trying to sort of like recreate content or an experience specifically for mobile over the desktop, I'm with you. Like why would you do that? I don't want a different experience on my mobile because I am maybe picking up something that I just left off on my laptop, right? You're going to have a sense of like losing your place or having to figure out this different interface. And I just don't, if anything, what we have to pay attention to is making sure that I really would sort of say in search results, right? Because we just want to make sure that those different kinds of those different pieces of information that are going to help people say, yes, this is what I was looking for, are all attached to the content body, sort of like what is the title? What is the summary? What are the tags? But again, that's been a challenge and a problem since desktop. So I'm rambling. No, we don't treat it any differently.
Just to give Felix some satisfaction here, I'd say that
Felix.
No, it's okay. I'll just make it quick. I think the what you're trying to do is load different JavaScript and different CSS. Both of those things are doable on the client side. You know, you can kind of test however you want to determine your, you know, quote unquote mobile kind of thing. You can test screen size or capabilities or whatever. And those are both things that you can load in after the fact. So I don't find those to be particularly hard to kind of, you know, use the same URL and kind of load different things conditionally. But loading different content is a little trickier because it's kind of, you know, maybe you could run those same tests, but then Ajax in content maybe. But if you need a whole different document, a whole different HTML page, it's a little tough. And I've played around with different solutions to that. I'm not sure what you would do in WordPress land, but it sounds like they do have WP Mobile is some kind of global that does some kind of mobile detection. That's kind of interesting. Maybe you could serve a different template entirely. I don't know. There's different ways to go there for sure. Kind of good luck with that, I guess. It wasn't much of an answer. I just wanted to address that we heard your question.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like he's relying on WP Mobile, which isn't doing a great job of targeting things. And that's because it's using device detection and that's probably not super scalable. So like random Windows phone is dropping through. So try to do it based on viewport size or something.
This is how we do it. Real quick, this is how we do it at CodePen is, and I know not everybody loves this, but I feel like we've got it fine-tuned to the fact it works pretty quickly, is we run a little bit of JavaScript right at the top of the page and it checks, do I have a cookie that tells me if this is mobile or not? If it doesn't have a cookie, it needs to make one. And it makes it through data that JavaScript has. How big is the screen? What's the pixel density? Does it support X, Y, and Z features? Then we can set that cookie and then refreshes the page really quick. But it's in the first few bytes of the page that redirect actually happens really fast. Then it has the cookie. And the cool thing about cookies is that your server reads them. So now I can make server-side choices based on that front-end data that I have. And it happens really quick, that the refresh or redirect and stuff. So I think it's been working pretty well for us. And the example that you can look at in a real live site is the CodePen editor itself, which we serve totally different set of stuff. HTML, everything is different for the CodePen editor, which is codepen.io/pen. That's how we do it.
Cool.
Let's see. This is the kind of classic one that we talked about earlier.
This will be like, this is Shop Talk FAQ here. So here we go. Brandon Crooks writes in, "Hey, just the other day, I was browsing through my Facebook timeline when I stumbled upon the Grid.io. Dun, dun. Okay, their goal seems to be automating the website layout and design process based on a user's content via AI with machine learning. This is absolutely amazingly awesome. My question is, how do you feel this will affect the web design industry? Since this looks pretty straightforward for anyone to use, will this cause for designers and will include content strategists to start moving away or into development? Thanks."
So to back for Christina's benefit here, we've talked about this on the show before because people use this kind of as a metaphor for like, are our jobs in danger because all we have to do now is feed this thing content and out pops a website. So, but it does, I don't know if you've seen it, but you could check it out, thegrid.io. That's what it's all about. But is it actually solving real problems? Does it pose danger for content strategists too? Or can your job ever be automated? Can you feel that in the future?
Yeah, you know, there some time ago, and they still talk about it. You know, programs that write articles, right, or programs that will spit out, you know, books or whatever, so that the AI is actually doing the person's job. And I guess I just sort of feel like, at least for right now, I'm going to bet on people over machines when it comes to meaningful communication. I don't know necessarily what to tell you. I mean, did, you know, the U.S. Postal Service think that it would be in danger 15 years ago, right? I don't know. I haven't spent much time thinking about it, but now I'm going to have nightmares.
You're right. It's very easy to think, of course not. Nothing can replace my brain and my genius ideas and stuff. And then something comes along and does. I think that's what, Dave, you were trying to say at one point. It's easy to think that. I certainly think that about web design. I'm like, I'm a smart person. Nothing can get rid of me. And Dave's saying like, man, I don't know. It might. So think
the
about
robots
it.
Are getting better.
You know, John Henry won, but he lost, you know.
I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting from the content perspective too, just because, like you've said, people have tried to make Markov bots that string together sentences that make some kind of sense or something like that. And I don't know that anyone's done really well or that Google has just flagged them into non-existence. So that's, I don't know. It's just interesting. I don't know. I want to make a Markov bot that writes Medium articles based on other Medium articles. just kind of strips together ethereal nonsense. But I don't, like, you could type in a post title and it would write an article for you. But I don't know. Content is weird. Because when we have a client, it's either they have too much content or too little content. Or it's kind of unkempt, just nonsense that we have to kind of shave off and make into usable pieces. And I don't know that the website really does that for you, right? I don't know that Grid.io is an editor for you, and therefore I don't know if it will make a similar product.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I actually via Skype sent you two links about a couple of services that are sort of delivering content that's actually being created and that supposedly can be delivered contextually across a site or a mobile experience, which is part of a content strategist's job, right? Planning and designing content when and where it's going to be served up. There is another, from an editorial perspective, there's another product called that's made by Acrolinks. I'll pull that link up for you too, that actually will go in and kind of score your content based on sort of quality and quantity.
Interesting,
and,
really.
Yeah.
So this is part of the inventory process. I feel like I've been at a Christina talk where you kind of make us do some inventory.
Yeah, yeah. I can go off about content inventories too. But I think that, you know, in terms of, oversight. That's something that could help in terms of, you know, I don't know, maybe. I mean, it's, did I think that I was going to be walking around? Yeah, you know, I tell my kids all the time, the future is great. And they're just like, what did phones look like when you were a little girl, mom? You know, and so, which is a real question my daughter asked me yesterday. Exactly. It looked like a rock, a big rock. So, you know, I'm not somebody to say, and I mean, I remember the first time I saw somebody open up a box from Amazon and I was just like, this is ridiculous. People need to look at what they're going to buy. They need to touch it before they buy it. You know, silly me.
Yeah, you can't, it's too hard to predict. But as we've said about the web design stuff, we've said maybe these can become your tools too. So, okay, we have 10,000 pages or whatever, bits of content that need to be inventoried. A person could do that, but maybe we could employ some of these tools to help us too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that seems like a pretty good place to wrap it up. Hey, guys.
Yeah.
The future.
Yeah.
The future.
Who knows what the future will bring?
In the year 2000, we won't have jobs. Hey, Christina, thank you so much for coming on the show and taking time out of your day. We really appreciate it. For those who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? And then what's one thing you'd like to plug before you go?
You can give me money via my PayPal account. No, just kidding.
Perfect.
You can find me on Twitter at Halvorson, HALVORSON. You can learn very, very, very little bit more about our services at braintraffic.com, where we have a one-page website. That's our content strategy. We can talk about that next time. It's very deliberate. I would love to see you at one of our upcoming content strategy events. If you are a first-timer or just starting to learn about content strategy, I would encourage you to come to Minneapolis in May. And you can find that at confabevents.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for coming out in the chat room. We really appreciate that. Thank you for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to rate us up 5 stars, whatever the maximum number of stars is. It's just that easy. We really appreciate it. And yeah, that's how people find out about the show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. And if you're looking for a job, if you hate your job, get a new job, shoptalkshow.com/jobs. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else I'm missing. Chris?
I should get a helium balloon to do this.
What?
Shoptalkshow.com. I always...
Someday right. Helium balloons are going to take over our jobs.
They will. It's just a matter of time.